You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast where we talk about all the Major League Baseball, and I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. This episode is being dropped on the second day of April 2020. Still no games, but we're going to kind of have a little bit of a grab bag with some clips from some previous guests and a Sully Baseball Classic rant. This show is available on the free and easy-to-use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available wherever you get your shows. And while you're at home, staying smart and staying safe during this whole corona crisis, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB, or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Orioles with Connor Newcomb, who is going to be one of my guests on today's shows, as we're going to be talking about, well, something that he's doing on his show. Check us out on Twitter at LockedOnMLB_net. You can also check us out on Instagram at LockedOnMLB. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Yep, it's the second day of April, and who knows if we're going to have a season. But there's a lot of stuff to talk about, a lot of things to cover. And let me tell you, the first thing I'm going to do, I'm going to play a segment from an old classic Sully Baseball Daily episode from 2014, believe it or not. And this is actually from the last day of 2014, December 31st. And I made a plea for baseball to consider something, a slight change in how they handle things in their stadium. And with this slight change, I made a very specific reference to one of my favorite TV shows of all time, The Wire. Baseball has to kick its beer habit. They just are too dependent on beer. There's too much beer being sold at baseball games. There's too many drunks at baseball games. There's too many players with DUIs. It's a major issue in baseball. DUI accidents, DUI deaths, and all sorts of just stupidity. And the aura of beer over baseball is one that I think is going to be one that fades out, or it should. And I think in the end, it'll help the product of the game. What the hell am I talking about? I talk to a lot of people about going to baseball games. I'm going to sporting games in general. And what tends to be the biggest complaint of it? Okay, prices. Usually prices. But also, drunks. Whenever there's an issue at a ballpark, whenever there's a fight at a ballpark, whenever there's someone who makes it unpleasant, whenever there's someone who makes the experience of going to a ball game awful, whether it's someone who picks a fight with someone or throws stuff around or it gets rowdy or it gets too much, what is always the common thread? They were drunk. There's a bunch of drunks. That's all you got to say. I'm in this section that there are a bunch of drunks there. The one downside of my trip to the World Series with my dad this past October was there was a guy in our section who was a little bit sloshed. Now, fortunately, eventually he walked away, but it made it a little uncomfortable. Think about every unpleasant experience you've ever had at a baseball stadium, and think about every single time it was because of someone being drunk. Think about every time you want to take your kids to a ball game and you think, oh, but you know what? It gets a little rough. And what inevitably is part of the roughness? A bunch of drunks. When the game starts to be at its absolute apex of excitement towards the end of the game, what always ruins the experience? Drunks. It's always a part of the game that stinks. And as much as I love baseball tradition, I'm not one to fall into the logical fallacy of, hey, it's a great tradition. What's a great tradition? Gambling used to be a big tradition in baseball. Now it's not. There's a lot of things that were terrible that we phase out. And inevitably, the first bunch of people who think, oh, that's just, you know, that's part of the game. You got to have it as part of the game. No, it's not. It's not part of the game. It really isn't. Beer is not part of the game. The game is what's played on the field. The game is following it. It's being passionate for your team, but not being a jerk. I did a whole video about this after in the wake of the Brian Stowe beating in 2011. If you're a drunk fan screaming, causing hell, you're a terrible baseball fan. You stink as a fan. I always turn to people when they're getting rowdy and drunk. I say, do you know what the score is? Do you know who's up? Do you know what's happening in the game now, you idiot? We're trying to enjoy the game. And the idea of, oh, well, I paid my ticket. Yes, so did I. And your ticket isn't there so you can be disrupting my game, and disrupting my experience. It's one of the reasons why I don't take my kids to many Dodger games. There are too many drunks. I know a lot of parents are like, I don't take my kids to ball games. There are too many drunks. And let me tell you something. I know you may say, oh, we can't lose the beer sales. Well, let me tell you something, baseball. If you increase the family sales, yeah, you won't have as many Budweisers flowing. But you will have, you have lots of hot dogs. You have lots of those little helmets with the ice cream in it. Because parents are buying stuff for their kids all the time and shoving sugar down their throat. And they're saying, maybe we shouldn't have sugar. Maybe we'll have sugar riots on there. But do you know what? That will wind up covering the costs of your beer flow. Or maybe not cut off beer sales altogether. But maybe, yeah, did you ever watch The Wire? You remember that great season of The Wire where they had Hamsterdam? Where they said all the drug dealings and all the drug dealers are going to be in this one zone of abandoned houses. And they're all going to be pushed in there. And whatever happens there, we're going to turn our back. And it is what it is. And we don't care. But if you come out of there, you're in big trouble. And what happened was the rest of the city became cleaned up and everything and was safe down the street. And it was just this one area that was filled with drugs and filled with anarchy. Well, guess what? I understand that was fiction. But there was something to that. Now there are some sections of the stadium that are non-alcohol section. I think there should be a few sections that should be alcohol sections. There's a siren going by me. Probably something bad happened because someone was a drunk. What if you had that one section? The one section is like Hamsterdam. And you could just do all your drinking and have all your brawling there. But the rest of the stadium is okay. The rest of the stadium is alcohol free. And I have a feeling that yes, there'll be people saying, oh, this stinks, I can't get a beer here. Or some people say, oh, this is our freedoms and everything like that. No. This is not about curtailing freedoms or anything like that. Knock it off. You can't get a beer at a movie theater. You can't get a beer at a play. Okay? Drunks always ruin things. As a stand-up comic, I did comedy all over the place. And I can tell you, drunks were awful. Drunks ruined shows. Drunks were... They think they're funny, and they're not. And they've always ruined the experience. And they ruin baseball games for people. They ruin sporting events for people. And if we say, all right, if you want to get drunk, fine, go there. There are your seats, right there, right over there. And that's where you have it. And the rest of us are going to actually watch and enjoy the ball games. And you're going to see more families there. And you're going to see fewer fights. A Red Sox-Yankee game should be one of the most fun things to go to in all of sports. And it's always terrible because of drunks. Because of drunks. Now, Sully, oh, but that'll never happen. That'll never happen because of revenue. Beer ad revenue.
beer commercials and everything like that are all over the place. It's there. You can't go there. I mean, hell, you have one city, you have Coors Field, you have Busch Stadium, Miller Park. I mean, come on. How are you going to do this? You could never take that money out. Really? Really, I can't. I say I can. You know, you don't have to go back that far. I was looking back through some old yearbooks. I have a whole bunch of old Boston Red Sox yearbooks and everything like that. I was going through yearbooks as recently as the 1990s. There's cigarette ads in there. There's cigarette billboards. Cigarette ads and sales and all that were a staple at ballparks. You could smoke at the ballpark. And I bet there's some people who would have argued that, oh, you go to there and the smoke and the smell of cigars and everything like that was part of the experience. It's part of the tradition. It's part of the game. No, it's not. And now you can't smoke there. And do you what? Good. I don't want to smoke. I don't want to breathe in that smoke. I don't want to be around the smokers while they're smoking at the ball game. And do you know what? All those billboards at Winston and Marlboro and all that stuff, they're all down now. They're all down now. And baseball is making more money than it ever has. You can look it up. So don't tell me that, oh, beer is, oh, it's part of the game. No, it isn't. It isn't part of the game. Sadly, drunks are part of the experience. I'd like to see one team try this. I'd like to see one team try the Amsterdam approach. Of course, the first bunch of people that are going to have to deal with this are going to be the most resistant. We all know that. Obviously, that's going to happen. We all know that the first people are the ones that it's, ah, this sucks. I want a beer, I want a beer, I want a beer. We went through this in New York City. When I was living in New York, and I used to go do stand-up comedy all the time, and you could smoke in bars. And suddenly you couldn't smoke in bars. And they made it, you know, they took out smoking. And I'm not a smoker. And to be fair, I'm not a drinker either. And I was like, you know, but you know, you should be able to smoke in bars. That's part of the, you go to a smoky bar and this and that and the other thing. And people were resistant of it and saying, oh, this is awful, this is awful. And then you start realizing, hey, wait a minute. This is much nicer now. You can breathe the air now. It's not foggy. Your eyes aren't stinging. You're not coughing the whole time. This doesn't suck. And I guarantee you, look around. Bars are doing quite well in New York. I bet you anything. You take the team that pulls the Amsterdam approach and says, hey, you can drink here. If you want to drink here, this is the section you can drink at. It's going to be a little rowdy. It's going to be a little rough. The rest of us are going to be watching the game of baseball. You're going to see more families there. You're going to see more merchandise being sold there. When you have a product that more people of that age group can go with their mother and fathers, with their brothers and sisters, with their friends at a birthday party and everything, you're going to be making more money than schlepping over a couple of Coors. It's a thing they found out in movies. It's why everything is aimed for teenagers and young teenagers, because the PG-13 rating makes more money than the R-rated rating. The R-rated, it's why you don't see as many F-bombs in films anymore. It's why you don't see as much blood and guts as you used to anymore. You see PG-13 level violence in movies, and boom, you get blockbusters like Guardians of the Galaxy and all the Avengers movies. And the new Star Wars movies, and Harry Potter, and all this other stuff. That's all in the PG-13 range. That's where it is. Well, maybe that's where baseball should be shooting for. People where fans are going to show up. People who are drunk, do you know what? This is a different place. You want to get drunk, you get drunk over there. The rest of us are here to watch a game. One team try that out. And people will hem, and people will haw. But then the money will come in. And you'll see your pal Sully is right.
All right, we're all at home these days, and we all know why. And let me tell you, this is the best time to take advantage of Postmates. And let me tell you something. we all still need stuff to eat, and we want to be able to help some of these local businesses and order from them. And what better way to do that than through Postmates? And we do that all the time here. There's lots of great places, lots of great restaurants to get not just pizza or burgers, but we got sushi the other day. We got fish. We got ribs. We got all sorts of great things, and they leave it right at your door, and it's fantastic. And they make your life easier because they can do your grocery delivery and whatever you can think of, from convenience stores, clothing stores, stuff, anything you need, you can go to Postmates. So don't worry about making your trips to the store. Postmates will take care of that for you. Just download the Postmates app on iOS or on Android. Find your favorites. Get anything you want delivered within an hour. And for a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free delivery, download the app and use the code LOCKEDON. That's code LOCKEDON for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmates it. I got to tell you something. We're going to be eating a lot. And we're going to be at home eating a lot. And we got to make some real efforts to make sure that we don't break our scales. Now, some of us hate stepping on the scale. I know I do. Do you hate stepping on the scale? Well, maybe it's because you haven't met the right one. Now, there's a company called Withings. They produce the first smart scale, and they are still the best. In fact, Tom's got rated Withings Body Plus the best overall smart scale for 2020. If you're looking to lose weight, willpower is the key, but so is having the right tools. Withings smart scales are known for durability and an exceptional user-friendly design. Step on, and data from every weigh-in syncs automatically to the free app for iOS or Android via Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. Now, lots of smart scales don't have the Wi-Fi option. That means you need to have your phone on. But with Withings Body Plus, gives weight, full body composition, weight trend, even a local weather report. The scale can support up to 8 users and even know who is who. So here's the deal. You can get 25% off of Withings Body Plus right now at withings.com for a very limited time. Go to withings.com, that's withings.com/MLB to get 25% off Body Plus body composition scale. That's withings.com/MLB and get 25% off Body Plus body composition scale. Okay, I'm going to play a little part. This was a section of an interview I did with my great friend John Bayliss, who I've known since college, and he's the creator of the comic book Sew Buttons. And he was a guest on the Bull Durham Minute podcast. In fact, his episode is being dropped tomorrow. His episode is being dropped on Friday. This was a part of our conversation which had nothing to do with Bull Durham, and it kind of clunked up the rhythm of the show. But I enjoyed it. It had to do with baseball, and I figured, you know what? Why throw that section out? So I'm putting it in this episode where you can enjoy it. It's a little bit of John Bayliss and I having baseball memories of the 1980s, and I give myself a little quiz.
You're also a big baseball fan. That's one thing that you and I, and Eli for that matter, we all bonded over. The two of us were big Boston Red Sox fans, and you, as we're recording this, you're wearing a Mets cap.
That is true. Like my history is weird, right? Because I'm born in the Bronx, and my mom's from the Bronx, my dad's from Brooklyn, and usually the way that goes is if your dad is from Brooklyn, you're not going to grow up a Yankees fan, no matter mm-hmm. where you are. So there are shots of me, like 1 year old, playing on the concrete. And I'm wearing a Mets t-shirt. Mm-hmm. But that said, I was in the Bronx in the 70s, and how do you not yeah. know who Reggie Jackson is in 1978? So I would go back and forth. I'm not someone who goes like I only like one or yeah. the other. And like I said, I was working at Tops in the mid to late 90s. So I mean, that was like the time to sort of be, everybody at Tops was a Yankees fan, and the parade mm-hmm. would basically come to our office, and it was a whole thing. So I, you know, I like them both, but I think at heart, I will probably always be a Mets fan. I mean, when I really became aware of baseball in the 80s, you know, I had a best friend, and we were just, you know, like 84, 85, 86, watching every Mets game. And it was like, that was the perfect time because, you know, by 86, that was it. We won.
Oh, what happened in 86? I don't remember what happened. The Red Sox fan.
Against some team.
Yeah, I met in black that. I had Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind that out of my head. It's amazing how that year 86, which used to put Red Sox fans in some form of PTSD, it's now, you know, all these titles since, it's kind of like, okay, that made 2004 feel better that we went through that. But at the time, there was no silver lining on that. And, you know, you said you were in the Bronx in the late 70s. It's like, okay, on the one hand, you had Reggie and Greg Nettles and Thurman Munson and Catfish Hunter and Ron Guidry and Sparky Lyle. And on the other side, they're trading away Tom Seaver for Pat Zachary. And you got Craig Swan, Lenny Randall, Steve Henderson, John Stearns. Oh, gee whiz. I wonder which team I'm going to be pulling for. I mean, that's why they pushed Lee Mazzilli out front and center as, hey, huh? Huh? He kind of looks like Fonzie, doesn't he? Huh? He's got that Travolta quality that, you know, you like him? And Mazzilli was a fine player, but it wasn't like – he wasn't a franchise player, but it was so like you've got to get someone front and center. And so, yeah, then, of course, in the 80s, the Yankees were a very strange team. We had Stacy Gotsoulias on the show a few weeks ago talking about the fact that the Yankees of the 80s were a frustrating team for their fans, that they were always good enough to be an 80-some-odd, sometimes 90-some-odd win team, but ever quite good enough to get over the top. And Steinbrenner kept trading away quality players like.
And wasn't he, that was also the period, wasn't he like firing the managers like, there on, was, like on a weekly basis or something? It was just crazy.
Okay, let me see if I can do this from memory. Okay. 76, 77, Billy Martin. Midway through 78, Billy Martin gets fired. Is replaced by Dick Houser for like two games or something ridiculous like that. And then in comes Bob Lemon. They win the World Series with Bob Lemon. And so because of that, Steinbrenner is given reinforcement that this is what you do. You shuffle the managers around. It works. So 79 starts with Bob Lemon, ends with Billy Martin. Billy Martin gets in a fight with a marshmallow salesman and is fired in the offseason. He's replaced by Dick Houser. Dick Houser was the young manager they were developing. But because they got swept by the Royals in the League Championship Series, he got fired. He was replaced by Gene Michael. Gene Michael was the manager in 81, but just before the playoffs, he fired Gene Michael and replaced it with Bob Lemon because Bob Lemon won a World Series. The next year, Bob Lemon, 82 was Bob Lemon, Clyde King, Bob Lemon, Gene Michael, and Clyde King. 1983, they brought back Billy Martin for 1 year. 1984, Yogi Berra was the manager.
Oh,
in 1985, he said, Yogi, you've got the team for the whole year. I'm not going to interfere. And then he got fired in April and replaced by Billy Martin. And then Billy took like a job as like the special assistant to the GM. And Lou Piniella became the manager in 86.
Oh, Lupa.
And then Lou was the manager in 87. They brought Billy back in 88. And then when he lost a critical series to the Tigers, they fired him and replaced him with Lou Piniella. 89, they brought in Dallas Green for reasons no one understands. And they fired him midway through the season, replaced him with Bucky Dent. The next year, they had Bucky Dent and fired him midway through the year and replaced him with Stump Merrill. The next year, they had Stump Merrill, then fired his entire coaching staff, including Buck Showalter, but then rehired Buck Showalter to be the manager. And Showalter was the manager until they lost the playoffs in 95, and they got rid of him and replaced him with Joe Torre.
Joe Torre.
The last part of the grab bag today is with a Locked On podcast host. That's Connor Newcomb, who is the guest of the show I did on the 1st of April. Yesterday's show was a Connor Newcomb show, and he's also going to be a guest on Bull Durham Minute. Be sure to subscribe to Bull Durham Minute. It's on all the places you get your podcasts. He was on yesterday's show, And we talked a little bit about the Hagerstown Suns, which he was the play-by-play guy for. And we also talked about the Orioles. And we went on a little bit of a tangent talking about his podcast and his Twitter feed, which is Locked On Orioles, where they're trying to figure out who the greatest Oriole of all time is. So we're going to finish out the show with Connor Newcomb and I having a little bit of a chat about the greatest Oriole of all time.
And you also have been doing on Locked On Orioles who the greatest Oriole player of all time is. And man, it's down to, as we're recording this, it's down to quite a Mount Rushmore, which is Jim Palmer, Brooks Robinson, Cal Ripken, and Eddie Murray, which I think probably should be the Mount Rushmore for the Orioles. I have to put the caveat on it. You and I exchanged tweets about this yesterday, the day before, where I would say that Frank Robinson is the greatest player ever to play on the Orioles, but because the bulk of his prime was in Cincinnati, I would have to not put him on that Mount Rushmore, as rough as that is, because he basically won them their first World Series title. But in terms of Oriole players, I don't think you could do better than Murray, Robinson, Brooks Robinson, Palmer, and Ripken.
Yeah, and I told you on Twitter, you know, it made perfect sense because, you know, he comes to the Orioles in 66 and wins a triple crown that year, wins the MVP, and the Orioles win the World Series. And then they win it again.
And he's the World Series MVP. And he's the World Series MVP as well.
World Series MVP. And then they win it again with him in 1970. And then he goes to the Reds in 72, or he leaves Baltimore in 72.
Yeah, he went to he went to the Dodgers, ironically. Yeah. That's where he went to. And then he kind of bounced between the Angels and the Indians before becoming the Indians manager.
Right. And in that, you know, the greatest Oriole of all time bracket you talked about, it was the four number one seeds. And Frank Robinson, you know, despite being that good, only 6 years. So he ended up being a number three seed in the bracket. But we actually just had the voting finish today in the semifinals. Ooh. So it's going to be Cal Ripken versus Brooks Robinson in the championship. If you want to vote and you're listening, voting will start Wednesday morning and go through Saturday. On our Twitter account at Locked On Orioles, you can go vote Cal Ripken, the Iron Man, versus Brooks Robinson, potentially the greatest defensive player of all time, matching up in who's going to be, at least via the fan vote, the greatest Oriole of all time.
And do you know who that reminds me of, what that matchup reminds me of? And forgive me, this is how my brain works. I'm thinking right now of Doug DeSensei's. Because Doug DeSensei was the third baseman who replaced Brooks Robinson and was kind of vilified in Baltimore because his name was not Brooks Robinson. And then when he was traded to the California Angels, that opened up a spot in the infield for Cal Ripken, who came up initially as a third baseman before being moved over to short. So that the two greatest Orioles of all time, according to this poll, bookended poor Doug DeSensei's, who was a fine player and probably much more popular with the Angels than he ever was with Baltimore. But I just kept thinking, yep, that's the tissue right there, the connective tissue between Brooksy and Ripken. So, hey, look at Connor. Thank you so much for being part of this podcast. This was a whole lot of fun. I hope you had some fun on it. And check out his stuff, including the great podcast on Locked On Orioles. All right, and check out all the other great shows of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it is your team every day. Follow us on Twitter at LockedOnMLB_net and LockedOnMLB on Instagram. And tell your smart device while you're home and staying safe, play podcast Locked On MLB, podcast Locked On Orioles if you want, or maybe podcast Locked On Fantasy Baseball. Check out all those great shows. Well, this has been the Locked On MLB podcast for the first day of April 2020. Please be safe out there. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sullivan.